If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Jason Burmis has the power of information.
Today's news talk.
TNT.
War, what's it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again now. I guess I know why they call me a boomer these days. Millennials, Gen Zers, you're probably not going to get that reference, and it wasn't even from my time, but the Grays are real, and I feel like they're popping now more than ever because, in case people didn't know, on top of the four people I interview on this show five nights a week, I've also got another interview show. And unfortunately, constantly, I'm talking to these political analysts that don't see any way out of the current situation except vote harder. And then every time that I bring up the fact that we have not only a corrupt system via the mail-in ballots, via the ballot harvesting, but the machines, I get a lot of radio silence. I get sometimes a nod and an agreement with me, but there's never a solution that's presented other than we need to go back to paper ballots and voter ID. Duh. Can anyone tell me how we get there? Can anybody tell me how we get there? You know, I was talking today to a former soldier, Amber Smith, around my age. She's written a book that's coming out, Unfit to Serve. And quite frankly, it's got woke in the subtitle, and I can't stand that stuff because I don't think that these are woke politics. I think that this is the controlled demolition of what was left of a constitutional republic where the baseline was freedom of speech and movement and your persons and property and the right to protect it. And we're not there anymore. We're not even close to there, and it's at the behest of this globalist authoritarian agenda that has overtaken, okay, our, not only our entire meaningful executive branch, but all that surround us in a techno-fascist culture. And I'm not trying to use big words, but look at everything that's coming at us. Free speech shouldn't, that's a low bar to be the baseline. I want to start there. If free speech is what you're bragging about, we're at a very low bar. And now we openly have the suppression of free speech on every major and meaningful platform. And they say, well, you can still do what you want and say what you want. There's just not freedom of reach. In this culture, in this era, you cannot meaningfully compete, not just in the marketplace, but the marketplace of ideas, if you cannot post openly on the vast array of mainstream social media platforms, whether it be TikTok, that they have wrongfully and red herring-wise accused of being a Chinese front. Again, it's not a Chinese front, all right? China is the model for the United Nations and the World Economic Forum and an authoritarian globalist agenda. So whoever owns it, who's going to plug that, is going to do that. See, everybody goes, well, look what they have on China's TikTok. I'm like, yeah, because they already live in an authoritarian, one-party ruled social credit score super prison. Let's be honest. And that's not to knock the Chinese people. And not everybody is under that. But that's the model they would like to bring here, where at the snap of a finger, the blink of an eye, anything can be deleted, that there is only one party, that you are the enemy if we say you are, and you will bend the knee. And right now, I'm not sure how to get out of that. I was having a long conversation earlier with somebody, and you know, they were talking about imagination land. There is no storybook or movie Bruce Willis ending to this one. We are going to have to fight hard. And folks, I hate to say it this way, but it's beyond just our constitutional republic. I know this is a global show. At the very end of the day, this is a very real battle for a free humanity. And that being said, you should be free to go check out this Weekend Truth Festival. If you would like to see all of your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shimarani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letissier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, Allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to bring is a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. Big smiles and hugs are recommended, as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk, weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around. There's only a limited number of places that are still available, so go check that out today. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got the news and the ruckus. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day, and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Pro-Palestinian protests at various U.S. colleges and universities continue to grow in size and intensity despite canceled classes, mass arrests by police, suspensions by administrators, and reported acts of sabotage by pro-Israeli lobby groups. And at the center of it all, Columbia, who entered its seventh day of protests on Tuesday. Here with the story. Joining us now is TNT news producer Adam Clark. Adam, bring the ruckus and let us know what's going on.
Well, Jason, I believe it was Han Solo, who I can quote as saying, "I've got a bad feeling about this." These protests, this started innocently enough, as it were, 7 days ago at Columbia, and it is now appears to be growing, and I think I'm seeing evidence of infiltration already, and I'm starting to get concerned, but it is what it is. All right, so, and Columbia, too. I mean, the esoteric symbolism behind just the name in this particular university alone could take hours to discuss. But Columbia is a prestigious university, of course, in New York City, and they have been the epicenter of the student protests opposing Israel's genocide in Gaza. It just really depends on where you go. You're going to see these protesters described as anti-Israel, described as pro-Palestine, or just straight up described as anti-Semites or pro-Gaza, pro-Hamas, all sorts of labels, but it's the same protesters that we're discussing here. I imagine from my initial report, research into this, that each person attending these protests have a different stance. But they do seem all opposed to the genocide thing. Okay, so I'm just going to call them anti-genocide protesters, to be clear. Okay, all right. Now, since the thing at Columbia, the protests have spread to other universities, including, and I think it's growing as I'm reporting now, Harvard, New York University, Yale, Arizona State, and this one took me by surprise, California State Polytechnic University at Humboldt. Yeah, I thought they were all a bunch of calm hippies over there. No, they were clashing with police, beating them. The protesters were beating the police with giant water. You got to see it. It's pretty wild. All right. Anyways, the police have arrested tons and tons and tons of people. The reports say dozens at Columbia and Yale for refusing to leave the protest encampments after the administrators demanded that they leave. I'm going to quote one Columbia student and protester, Grant Miner, who was speaking to the New Statesman. They said that the protesters' demands include, quote, amnesty for students who had been suspended by the administration over earlier campus protests, he being one of them, divestment from Israeli bonds and equity, financial transparency around how the university invests its $14 billion, with a B, endowment, end quote. That is what started all of this. The protests made headlines in the U.S. on Monday, as new mass graves were discovered outside Nasser Hospital in Gaza with over 200 civilian bodies, including doctors and nurses still wearing scrubs, as well as women, men, and children, all apparently killed by the Israeli army. So that didn't help things. On Monday night, police cleared a protest encampment centered at New York University's Gould Plaza at the university's request, and faculty and students were arrested. The Washington Post reported how videos on social media showed, quote, dozens of officers in tense confrontations with protesters. Some officers tossed tents and others grappled with demonstrators. Videos also showed police loading people whose hands were zip tied behind their backs onto correctional buses, end quote. The confrontation began after university police blocked access to the plaza Monday morning, where approximately 50 protesters were demonstrating, quote unquote, without authorization, according to NYU spokesman John Beckman. The barriers were breached earlier in the afternoon by additional protesters, quote, many of whom we believe were not affiliated with NYU, end quote, who exhibited, quote, disorderly, disruptive, and antagonizing behavior, end quote, and refused to leave when told the protests would be disbanded, he said. The university then requested assistance from the NYPD, he said, adding there were, quote, several anti-Semitic incidents reported, end quote. Last week, there have been over 100 students at Columbia who were arrested amid accusations of violence and anti-Semitism among protesters. NYPD's Commissioner Edward Cabin said, quote, the students that were arrested were peaceful, offered no resistance whatsoever, and were saying what they wanted to say, end quote. According to Grant Miner, again from Columbia, who's Jewish, allegations of anti-Semitism are unfounded. He said, quote, I'm not sure what people would be referring to. I myself am Jewish. The narrative is that we're a violent mob and there's been no violence here. The only anti-Jewish sentiments I've received are from hardcore Zionist Jews calling me a fake Jew. In fact, I got a fun email to my work email calling me just a subject line, Judenrat, end quote. And journalist Max Blumenthal, wonderful journalist, he reported how pro-Israel lobby groups were offering, quote unquote, cash compensation to young Zionists, quote, willing to wear keffiyehs and walk in these demonstrations, end quote, as provocateurs to spread anti-Semitic slogans and issue threats against Jews, which would probably, you know, the media would just eat that up, wouldn't they, Jason? What say you about this one?
Oh, this one's a mixed bag for me. Okay, so let's start with, where was the anti-war movement the last 20 years on college campuses? It's so bizarre to me that right now, and don't get me wrong, I don't like what's happening in Palestine and Israel and now the expansion with Iran. And obviously, I haven't liked what's going on with Ukraine and Russia. But in particular, I think that, yes, a lot of this does feel manufactured. At the same time, every time you talk about these protesters, not only are you talking about the anti-Semite label, but immediately they're pro-Hamas or they're pro-Hezbollah. Now, I want to say from the very beginning, I just want an end to war, period. I don't like seeing dead people, dead kids, dead women, dead children of any color, creed, religion in my feed, periodly. That's it. Let's end that. Okay. I'm not a pro anything except for pro peace. Now, let's talk about Columbia and the fact that now I believe they've decided they're going to shut down for the rest of the year. This is across seven universities. Now, for the average person going to Columbia, the trust fund kid, the privileged Ivy Leaguer, doesn't really matter to them. We did it. We shut down the man. Yeah, it just reinforces this kind of behavior that can rage against the machine and have some kind of success. Meanwhile, bombs will be dropped today. Bombs are going to be dropped tomorrow. How effective is this really? Then look at what's left of the meritocracy in this country. There are still kids that are attending Columbia University that come from poor families that, you know, studied, and this really does affect them. They're like, wait a minute, what am I supposed to do? I don't exactly have a structure to go to. So this is all just very odd to me, you know, and it's giving the media this narrative of, right, the pro-Hamas things, look how dumb this is, and gives us cover to reinforce our military-industrial complex, not only in the Middle East, but also across the board with Ukraine and Russia, although that's being talked less about. They haven't rolled out little Rambo in about 12 to 18 months. Looks like Zelensky wasn't playing with the folks anymore, but the bombs are still dropping, my friend. So that's the real issue. It's kind of like with my monologue. Okay, guys, good for you. I don't know if this is a concerted message. If you really feel strongly about this, I like that. But how do we actually get the bombs to stop and our foreign policy to change and, you know, restore our constitutional republic so our military doesn't back conflicts like this, Adam?
Maybe we need some EMPs and a great reset. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Calm down, everybody. But yeah, it would appear that those are the only two things that would be able to stop this rolling military-industrial complex snowball from hell. Yeah, I don't know, Jason. The protesting thing clearly is usually aimed in the wrong direction. And in this case, you probably agree with me and you said as much. It really does appear like it's already starting to get co-opted, at least if it wasn't already manufactured from the get-go. So my spidey sense is tingling all over the place. So, you know, quote another movie character, hold on to your butts.
Well, I think we have to look in the mirror, right? It can't just be Israel. Again, the United States was there on October 7th. We sent more special forces. U.S. military members in the U.S. have died over there. We're very much a part of this conflict. It's more than just an alliance. It's more than even just funding them. So, you know, we have a right as citizens of this country and really citizens of humanity to stand up against this and say, hey, this has to stop. You know, no one's calling for Israel to be wiped off the map. Nobody wants suicide bombers. I'm not getting a Hamas or Hezbollah back tattoo. No, I just want people to stop killing each other. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with the conscious resistance himself, Derek Brose. We're going to talk about some of the new policies of war, as well as the metaverse ID. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
TNT's Dirk Pohlman.
There was a plan on the British side to immediately after the victory over Germany to continue the war, to push the weakened Soviet Union back over over backwards. Yeah, so that is something that is not well known. That plan has been, you could find it on the internet and then it's off and on sometimes again. It's very difficult. It's not long. It's something like, if I recall correctly, something of 30 pages, I would say. I read it.
The Soviets had this coup in Czechoslovakia in 1948. And that appeared as the Soviets really was pushing forward and they would, they thought that this means that we have to start an alliance against the Soviets. And that was NATO became.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
It's time to switch on
today's News Talk Radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah! TNT.
It is now my pleasure to introduce my very good buddy, an independent journalist that is now a veteran in the field. You can check him out over at theconsciousresistance.com, and he does a lot of work over at The Last American Vagabond as well. He's a true journalist on the ground covering topics like Epstein for over a decade and even fluoride in the water. But today we're going to start with war, unfortunately. We've kind of discussed these issues before, but right now I do feel like the world is in a very different place than even when it was at the peak of the war on terror. You have this proxy war with no end in sight between Russia and Ukraine that clearly we are directing. And now the Middle East, Israel and Palestine in particular, has kicked off on a level we've never seen really in our lifetime. And for the first time in my lifetime, we're talking about there is no two-state solution. That's not even on the table. So then what are we talking about? And you've recently written an article about Mexican and Iranian embassies and really how even the norms of war, as disgusting as they are, have now been pushed past the limit. And what are these new norms we're seeing?
Yeah, so thanks, Jason. I mean, what I think we're seeing is really a, I hate to use the term, but maybe a new normal fits here in terms of international domestic, diplomatic relations. And as for those who've been following the Israel-Iran back and forth, last month, Israel bombed an embassy or consulate in Damascus, Syria, an Iranian consulate. And they said they were doing so to kill some generals and kill some important people. And then shortly after that, there was another situation happening with the Mexican embassy in Ecuador, which is also undergoing quite a bit of chaos right now. And I basically, in this article for The Last American Vagabond, was kind of asking this question, looking at these two situations and showing how, although this isn't the first time that embassies or consulates have been sort of the alleged sovereignty of them has been violated, this does appear to be kind of shifting into a new territory where maybe these ideas that we all know, I think, especially everybody listening here, that the governments tend to sort of pick and choose which, you know, whose sovereignty they believe in, right? They'll respect the sovereignty of China. The U.S., for example, will respect the sovereignty of China and Russia. But if they want to go violate the sovereignty of Afghanistan, for example, you know, they do that. But generally speaking, the idea is that consulates, embassies, these are supposed to be seen as inviolable. You know, this is like in the case of the Iranian consulate in Syria, the idea is that that's, and for all intents and purposes, Iranian territory. And for Israel or any other country to violate that is a violation of international norms, Vienna Convention, and things like that. And then the same thing in the Mexican situation. So I don't know if folks have really been paying attention to that, but I think these are the kind of situations we need to look at and ask, as you mentioned, with us kind of dealing with multiple fronts here in the international geopolitical war front. We have Ukraine, the Middle East, which has been ongoing, and several other areas that are sort of ready to pop off or already popping up. We could talk about Haiti as well and being overrun by violence and the U.S. embassy and consulate being overrun there. It just seems like we're in some new ground here.
Yes. And, you know, this is where diplomatic action is actually supposed to take place. Now, in the context of these Israeli strikes, it's now also come out, and, you know, this will take us into the next segment, that they used AI. Lavender is the program. And we're talking about 37,000 individuals. And we're not just talking about going after these people if, in fact, you know, they're not surrounded by women and children. I think that was made very clear when we saw that Wolf Blitzer clip where they said they had to kill one member of Hamas and the women and children essentially didn't matter because this is a new type of warfare. They're being very upfront in the type of warfare that's being carried out. And when we talk about Lavender and even death from above via drone strike, we also have that leaked footage of civilians being targeted, no weapons whatsoever, women, children amongst them. And there's been no reporting of that in the mainstream media, sparse in the alternative media. So this not only feels like a different type of warfare, but even how it's being reported on in the so-called free press, the independent press.
Yeah, I think you make a great point there in terms of the use of AI and these new technologies, in addition to the violations of this alleged national state sovereignty we're talking about. I mean, we are in a new territory, drone strikes, as we are seeing with Israel's campaign in Gaza, how precise they are. And I say that when I mean by that is, like, clearly we can see by the pictures that if they want to strike the top of a an aid truck, they can hit it right in the logo, right in the middle of the van, with some precision, and they're able to kill people, you know, that they target indiscriminately in some cases. So not only has the technology clearly improved, drones and missiles and all these things we're aware of, but now, as you mentioned, the bringing in AI into this, we're in some really dangerous territory. I wanted to make another point here that I mentioned in my article is, you know, first off, as I alluded to earlier, this isn't the first time that embassies have been attacked or shot or violated. There is an interesting history, but it's not like hundreds and hundreds of times, but you could list maybe a dozen different times where there have been various attacks on U.S. embassies, Cuban embassy in D.C. in 2023 recently. You can go back to the 90s. But I also made the point here that while the U.S. and Israel and some of these nations may make a big deal about this alleged sovereignty, we all know here that they violate that sovereignty at will. One of the examples I brought up was the January 2020 assassination of Iranian Major Soleimani, which was a drone strike in Baghdad near the international airport in Iraq. So this is the U.S. saying, here's an official from a nation we deem is terrorist or dangerous, traveling about in, you know, a nation that is allegedly allied with the U.S. and saying we're going to violate the sovereignty of that nation and the other nation and just bomb people wherever we want. I mean, this has been the policy for the U.S. for a while, where they openly say that they will chase whoever they deem as terrorist around the world. And again, besides maybe Russia or China, are willing to violate not only the airspace, but the land and the sovereignty of other nations if it means killing people that they deem as dangerous and threats to national security.
Yeah, and people better take note, because if they haven't noticed, they've been pretty open about inverting the system, not on terrorists abroad, but the domestic terrorists here at home. So if you don't think somewhere down the line, you too can be policed via drone. When I say police, I mean blown up, judge, jury, executioner style. You're not thinking in the near future. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the metaverse, mandatory IDs, the WEF, the UN, and much more. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
Now,
I've got good news and bad news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Tesla has announced significant job cuts at its Austin, Texas location, which serves as both the company's headquarters and the site of a major factory. Chris Keiss, an attorney for former President Donald Trump, expressed concerns on Fox News that legal actions against Trump are more about hindering his presidential campaign than achieving judicial victories. A federal judge has unsealed new documents related to former President Trump's classified documents case, revealing Plasmic Echo as the FBI's code name for the investigation.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
It's time to talk the metaverse, and here's the thing. It's been a large-scale failure in the, you know, form it's currently in. But that doesn't matter, because the profits keep going up, and this is a globally backed thing. It's not just about Facebook, which does work with our intelligence agencies and our governments, but it's also about globalism and, down the line, global governance. If you look at the things that are put out via the United Nations and also the World Economic Forum, there is a partnership with this metaverse. This is stakeholder capitalism. And as they push us into this digital wonderverse, they want identification. We've already seen this on certain beta levels. Right now you have Sam Altman and WorldCoin out there, where it's a UBI token based in your biometrics that's verifying you're human. You and I have often posited it on the post-truth world. We're living in it right now with the development of AI. We're waiting for Sora, which is text to video creation, to become consumer level. But the deepfake stuff, very much consumer level. Almost nothing can be trusted at this point. Even AI generation of music now have entire YouTube channels that are extremely prolific. Things are moving at a rapid pace, and they're ushering people into this metaverse. So tell us about it.
Yeah, this is the fourth industrial revolution as named by World Economic Forum current founder Klaus Schwab, which he wrote about in the book in 2016 titled the same name, Fourth Industrial Revolution. More recently, people would know this as the Great Reset. Part of that plan is not only an economic makeover of the entire world, creating a new financial system, what the United Nations and other globalists continue to call a new Bretton Woods movement moment in relation to the creation of the IMF, saying we're going into a new stage, CBDCs, et cetera. So they're not only trying to transform the world in terms of that, but as we know, and as you've reported for years now, Jason, the transhumanist agenda is part of that. And this report that I focused on, this latest article, is called Blending Reality. The WEF calls for creation of metaverse identity. And this is a report they put out in early March called Metaverse Identity, Defining the Self in a what they call a blended reality. And of course, blended reality would be a mix of the real world, physical reality as we've known it forever, what they call extended reality, virtual reality, augmented reality, all these sorts of things. And then, of course, the idea of living in some sort of metaverse, some sort of all-encompassing internet of everything, where maybe through a headset, through contact lens, through a brain chip, eventually people jack in and are able to create a avatar and look like whatever they want, sound like whatever they want, and experience the world through this. And the WEF seems pretty committed to this idea. As you say, Jason, it's mostly so far been a failure, especially in terms of Facebook-specific metaverse, people really laughing at the early versions of it. But nonetheless, these people, and these are not just, you know, nobodies. This report was supported by the WEF, and it had insights from 150 quote-unquote global experts, which included executives from Amazon, Microsoft, PayPal, Sony, Lego, Meta, Magic Leap, MasterCard, Walmart, Qualcomm, and of course, Google. It also had reps from Atlantic Council, the NIH, the United Nations, Council of the European Union, and members of the Australian, United Arab Emirates government, and others. So a pretty big group there. This is a part of an ongoing WEF initiative called Defining and Building the Metaverse. And the short version of this, I encourage people to go check out the report, is just that from what I could see, Jason, this is another way for them to push the digital identity agendas, claiming that as we move into the metaverse, or people try to dip their toes and live between the metaverse and the real world, that we're, identity is going to be important to that. And it became very clear in this report, as I read through all of the 69 numbing pages of it, that digital identity is central to the metaverse digital dystopia as they imagine it. They start talking about how, you know, this is going to be our way of redefining ourselves. And they talk about what they call the identification gap, which is what they believe that's the number of people who don't have a form of ID. And so, as you know, I live between Texas and Mexico. A lot of people in Mexico don't have IDs or choose not to, or maybe just day workers living under the table. They want to go find those people. They want to find the poor Indian farmers and others in the so-called third world, get them all digital identities, get them taxed, bring them onto the tax farm and everything else. And so this metaverse is one of the ways they're selling people to buy into that. And they do admit in a few places that it could, quote, negatively influence social mobility in physical worlds, given the reliance on economies of digital platforms, if you choose to opt out of this. So in subtle ways, they're admitting that not only is this going to gather all sorts of data about you, they call it inferred data, by using all these different devices to live in the metaverse, it'll track all sorts of information about you, your movements, your preferences, your supposed future decisions. And that information could then be, of course, used by governments, corporations, et cetera. So overall, it's like they're just trying to push digital ID as part of it. They're calling it a metaversal ID, saying it's going to be so important as people are moving into the space where they want to redefine themselves as humans. We know this is part of gender identity stuff, as well as the bigger transhumanism push, and it's all tied in there. And so this is a new report. It's a month old, Blending Reality, Defining the Self in a Blended Reality, Metaverse Identity, by the WEF.
Now, I think you hit the nail on the head at the end when you said, look, they're moving this into the realm of transhumanism. So this is beyond just track, trace, database. This is even beyond, because again, this is going to be monetized in many digital forms. So it's beyond the blockchain and the move into a CBDC. They're very much talking about a digital twin and you identifying with a virtual world as base reality, blending those things on purpose. You know, you named a myriad of technologies that are already out there, and you also named a myriad of companies that are involved in this. And now we see even Apple in their high end dipping their toes into virtual reality with their $3,500 headset. Now, I've seen the reviews. It's not very revolutionary. But what it is it is this new business model where, you know, they've taught you somewhat in the corporate world, tele-everything, right? We've all been used to the Zoom meetings now. Now they want to take it to the next level, and they want to make that more personable, because at the end of the day, they've already blurred the lines of reality, biological reality, with young people. They want to force everybody on that train into this transhumanist movement, in my opinion, Derek.
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted to add this piece here because you reminded me of this. At one point in this report, the WEF even acknowledges what they say, that, quote, unfettered augmentation could, quote, incidentally promote reality dysmorphia and or depersonalization derealization disorder. It's called DPDR. I'd never heard of it. I looked it up. It is a real thing, and it's basically, the research says, when people start experiencing feelings of detachment while using virtual reality or extended reality, these kinds of things, and the technology starts blurring the lines between the objective physical real world that we know and this virtual metaversal reality. So, you know, they're acknowledging that if people kind of get addicted to it, as we can imagine some people might, it could promote reality dysmorphia, depersonalization, derealization disorder.
But that's a lifestyle choice, and they'll have you embrace that, just like they already have you embrace gender dysphoria. Dysmorphia, dysphoria, it doesn't much matter. They want to get you into these new digital realms for command and control purposes, because at the end of the day, as you know, Derek, I think the two main forms of transhumanism is, on one end, you have a predator class that very much wants to biologically live forever and experiment on the human populace to achieve that goal, and then convince the rest of us that we can upload our consciousness into a future type metaverse where we're really just euthanizing our way to enslavement all the way through. Derek Brose, The Conscious Resistance. You can read those articles over at The Last American Vagabond. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back more TNT after this.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Right, I've got cancer. I've been trying to tell the rest of you, but no one's listening. And I don't just mean you, ears, eyes. Would you look in the damn toilet for once? Hands, roll those sleeves and take a sample. And legs, trot off to the doctor to get me looked at. Because bowel cancer can be successfully treated when detected early. Now look who's finally woken up.
This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
We are back, and we are joined by Dr. Heath of Therapy Bites. We're going to be talking about mental health. And let's start here. I can't turn on a YouTube video, listen to a podcast, be in the car, listen to the radio without hearing some ad for BetterHelp or mental health at this point. Now, look, I'm a guy that I've never been to therapy as an adult. I don't think that I need a therapist. I've never been on any kind of psychotropic medication. I've avoided all of those things. And a lot of those things concern me, especially with the state of the current mental health that I see surrounding me in this country at the moment. So right now, I mean, where are we as a nation with mental health? What do you think when you see all of these different ads for different types of telehealth that are really, when I watch the ads, they're basically identity politics ads. Oh, I'm more comfortable with this person because she's a woman of color and I'm a tribal lesbian. I mean, the things that are going on in these commercials are absolutely ridiculous in my mind. So I'm going to let you take it from there. Where are we with this stuff?
Man, what a big question. I don't think we have enough time to talk about all that, but I'll dive into it. Yeah, the thing is, if you own an automobile, at some point in your life as an automobile owner, you may need a mechanic. If you own a human brain, at some point in your life, you may need a cognitive or a neural mechanic. So there's no shame in getting a mechanic to teach you how to use one of your greatest pieces of hardware and software, software being thoughts, hardware being the brain. And so true, yes, don't hesitate. You know, I work on parts of the body just above the eardrum. But if I need a proctologist, I go to a proctologist. I don't recommend do-it-yourself proctology. I'm not sure you'd have to be an acrobat to do that. And so I don't recommend do it yourself mental health, go to a professional. But as you point out, buyer beware. And it always surprises me, people thinking that I have to find somebody I'm comfortable with in order to get good treatment. Listen, speaking of proctology, when I go to my proctologist, it is never a comfortable visit, nor what I expect it to be. If you're looking for a massage therapist, find a massage therapist. Psychotherapy is not massage therapy. It is engineered to be uncomfortable. And so don't let that be your litmus test for getting good therapy. But yeah, that's a great question.
So how does one get good therapy when they need it? When does somebody actually know when they need therapy? And then on top of that, you talk about being comfortable with somebody. You know, you made the mechanic thing. You know, I want a guy that's going to fix my car the right way and not bend me over while he does it. You know, I've actually found that guy. He literally has Friendly Auto in the title, but he's the man. I love that I found that guy. Not every mechanic is going to be that way. Now, I might have, you know, socially thought this person was a better person, but at the same time, you want somebody who's going to do the job. What I see with a lot of mental health is kind of, I precluded before, is that a lot of these people are drugged up at the end of the day. I don't know how much therapy is actually helping these people when they're on an antidepressant and then another antidepressant on top of that, and that's not working. So we're going to give you Abilify, which is, you know, an antidepressant for people on antidepressants that aren't working, et cetera. How do we combat that? And what do you recommend people? Because right now, I would say that there are a lot of people reaching out for mental health, whether they need it or not, because of just the advertisements alone we're talking about. And like you said, buyer beware. So how do you stay away from, in your practice, I don't know how you do it, but I would assume that you're not heavy on the drugs unless you absolutely need to be. And, you know, that's a big thing you're not getting with the vast majority of people in this field.
Well, the problem is a bit of a turtle story. You know, there's an old story about a young man that goes to a mystic and he says, what is it that holds up the world? And he says, don't you know anything? It's a turtle. And the young man thinks about it and says, well, yeah, but what holds up that turtle? And he says, it's another turtle. And then he says, yeah, but what holds up that turtle? At which point the mystic bops him upside the head and says, it's turtles all the way down. So unfortunately, in the medical field, you can go to a doctor and say that you have some sort of struggle in a functional area. This is back to your other question. How do you know when you need therapy? When one of the main areas of functional status is adversely affected, social, emotional, physical, spiritual, occupational, educational, cognitive. And so when one of those areas is adversely affected to the point that it's just kind of sabotaging your functional status. It's kind of the same way with an automobile. When you get where you can't drive the thing down the road straight, stay between the mayonnaise and the mustard, the yellow lines and the white lines on the road, you may need a mechanic. When you can't keep your life on the in the center of your side of the highway, you might need a neuromechanic, a cognitive mechanic. So back to my turtle story, you go into some practitioner's offices and they say, well, you have depression or anxiety or whatever, we have a pill. Oh, a pill. Well, what else do you have? Well, we have another pill. Oh, you have a second pill. Well, what else do you have? Listen, we have different size pills, different shape pills, different pills from different manufacturers, different strengths of pills, different colors of pills. It's pills all the way down. See, here's the thing, is there is no mental salvation that will ever be found at the bottom of an amber-colored pill bottle. Even the great Aaron Beck, I remember hearing him say during a meeting I was in, we celebrated his 90th birthday at the time. He lived to be 100. But during his 90th birthday, even he said, and he was a psychiatrist, at some point, to fully appreciate the value of therapy, you're going to have to titrate off all the psychoactives. And even with schizophrenia, he was experimenting with techniques that required either very little medication or no medication. Now, let me give the disclaimer. You should never, ever just cold turkey stop a psychotropic, a psychoactive medication. Do it very, very slowly. Never let your physician do that. And when I say slowly, I'm talking about more slowly than a 25% reduction at a time. And there's all kinds of reduction schedules. Ask your primary care physician, your PCP, for one of those. But yes, don't cold turkey off a medication. But a medication like we're talking about here is really a bit of a Band-Aid. And you're not going to be able to go through life in a healthy way by slapping on Band-Aids. You need to get the underlying wound treated, and that's where the mental health comes in. And even more in this day and time where there's wars and rumors of wars, you know, it's almost biblical. There's wars everywhere, and the media is really reeling people in and keeping people's eyeballs screwed to the screen, consuming all of this catastrophic news coverage, when the people watching it can do very little or nothing about it at all. So it's really buyer beware, not just with psychotherapy, but also with news and TV consumption.
So basically you're talking about media consumption and what somebody is absorbing on their day-to-day. You also kind of alluded to the fact that if you're off the rails on your life, essentially what I would say, if you're not paying your bills, if you're not somewhat comfortable in your work, getting your sleep, et cetera, and all these things are chaotic, obviously that's going to cause mental stress. And, you know, I always tell people, well, first of all, you got to take a step back and make a plan. How could I become more comfortable? And then you actually have to enact that plan. It's not going to be the most comfortable thing. For instance, if I know that I'm going to be another $500 short on my rent and bills next month, if I don't get another job, well, I better go find another job. And then I'll have choices in that. But it's not really a choice that I just wait until the bills pile up, because that's just going to cause more mental stress. So I guess what I'm getting at, when you are doing this type of psychology and trying to help people, don't you gravitate towards goal-orientated things? In other words, addressing the issue, at least verbally, what they think it is, and then say, all right, well, how can we solve that? What's a real way to solve that? And how can you enact that in your life? And it's also about personal responsibility and accountability after the fact, right? It may not work out, but even trying is going to put you in a better place mentally to start. So maybe you have to try something else, correct?
Absolutely. It's really, there's a term for that. It's called behavioral activation. And I like to share with people, Stephen Covey's, the great writer that wrote a book called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. One of the best mental health books that you can read, by the way. And he talked about the circle of concern, which is the donut, and the circle of influence, which is the donut hole. And so I get people in my clinic and they're hyper-focused on the donut, the things that they're just concerned about, but they have no control over. And that can lead to them thinking that they have no power in their life. So you're absolutely right. Thank you for that. That we need to refocus on what we can do, what we can get our arms around, because one of the biggest drivers of depression itself is behavioral deactivation. Laying in bed thinking I can do nothing, I have no power, it's no use, everything that I do, you know, turns to crap, nothing ever works out. That's called, by the way, fortune telling and catastrophizing. So one of the main approaches to therapy, and especially in this day and age of war, is getting people to focus in on with maybe a news diet, maybe a social media diet, where you view social media and news the way you might view Nerds on a Rope or Honey Buns. You shouldn't sit around and eat them all day long. It's just not good for your health. So you can schedule yourself opportunities to reward yourself with those things if you're interested in those things. But if it's all day long, every day, 7 days a week, that's not good for your brain. By the way, one of the reasons why it's not, let's just take war. And so imagine that you're going to take an airplane flight next week. And all you do from then until now is sit around and watch videos of airplane crashes. Now, what kind of mindset do you think you'll be in when you go to get on the airplane? Imagine looking at victims of airplane crashes. Well, here's what the brain does with a system called the mirror neuron system. And the research on that is that brain cells actually fire when you see someone engaged in an action as a human, and your brain creates a video as if it's happening to you. So literally, let's just say you watch a video of somebody running from a grizzly bear and the grizzly bear is about to eat them. Your brain will actually respond to that as if that trauma, that tragedy is happening to you. So imagine the plane crash. Imagine the war scenes, which you're consuming all the time. It's really just a junk food diet for the brain, watching this hour after hour after hour. And like you said, it's all about behavioral activation. What can I do in my life which is healthier than consuming this junk food diet of war-driven TV news media?
So about a decade ago, when I started seeing social media and what it was becoming, I decided to take it off my phone. You know, everybody had Facebook on their phone, and I remember it also had Messenger on it. And I thought to myself, man, all these people have access to me all the time. I don't want that. I'm not going to put my personal life up there. I'm not Mr. Selfie. That's not me either. And I only have Twitter on my phone. I don't have an Instagram. I've never had a Snapchat, etc. This generation lives on those. Like, I start talking to younger people and maybe we connect, they go, what's your Snap? And I go, I'm not a 14-year-old girl. I don't have one. But there are plenty of people that do have those things. And what I've noticed is the media has gotten shorter and shorter. Kind of my generation got a flavor of that with Vine when it was like 6-second clips, but that wasn't the norm. But now that is very much the norm with TikTok, Instagram, etc. And you know, we know that they put that one video out there that's 30 seconds or less. How many selfies do they take before that? How many failed dances? How is that affecting these people's mental health? And you talk about, you know, a diet of this stuff, garbage in, garbage out. I think that is a huge issue with this younger generation, even mine included. It's not just the fear of missing out. It's the fear of not living up to this social media superstar idea.
Well, sure. In therapy, I call that fairy tailing. And there was an old song from a country singer named Charlie Rich. They called him the Silver Fox back in the 70s. The song was, no one knows what goes on behind closed doors. And so anytime you look at a person, you're really fairy tailing, thinking that their life is better than yours. And I've had people sit on my couch and say, my goodness, if only my life was like this other person's. And I'm sitting there thinking, gosh, that other person was on my couch yesterday and their life sucks. You would never want their life. And so it really is very much of a fairy tale, but it's very seductive. It's the green grass phenomenon. We always think that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence until you realize that that grass may be spray painted green.
I'm not that guy. I feel like, hey, I'm very fortunate to be where I'm at. And I think that's another issue, right? A lot of people want to look at the negative and gravitate to the woe is me victimhood mentality, but they're refusing to look at the positives in their life and how if you start focusing on those positives and working towards more of that, you feel empowered. You don't feel like everything is coming down on you. And the more empowered you feel, I feel like you have less mental issues. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to be becoming angry or that you might not be depressed. These things are going to happen. It's human nature. We have feelings. We have empathy and apathy and all those other things. But we have to be able to control them. So what do you suggest to the person who feels like those are all out of control, you know, for various reasons? Well, where should they get started?
Well, I think that you should get started with the simple things in life. And I'll just list a few of those. Engage in regular physical activity. Walking, jogging, yoga, some form of exercise that you can enjoy. I would recommend paying attention to the colors in your life. The three most important ones are yellow, green, and blue. Yellow is for sunshine. Get out for some period of time in the sunshine. Green, get out around nature, around trees, around grass. It's called forest bathing or nature bathing. That doesn't mean get naked and bathe out in the woods. It just means get out in creation itself. And then one of my favorites is blue mind. So we have yellow mind, green mind, and blue mind. So find a body of water. Maybe there's a stream or a creek or a lake or a pond or a pool. I have a pool right out there. And I sit beside it. There's all kinds of blue mind research about how that reduces free radicals, improves your immune system, improves your mindset, reduces cortisol, reduces fight or flight driven hormones. And so yellow mind, green mind, blue mind.
Dr. Heath, thank you so much. I got all three in today on my dog walk over at Crow Creek Park. Everybody can do it. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break. Second hour up after this. This is my show. I am Jason Burmis. More TNT coming up.